Welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is a celebrity branding authority and professor of marketing at the University of Southern California, best known for pioneering a scientific, research-based approach to quantify celebrity influence. He's written an eye-opening guide to understanding why only the boldest and baddest ideas will survive, and how to make sure yours is one of them. Jitendra Sedev, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you for having me here, Georgina.
All of this Hollywood stuff, that's great, but you come from Bristol.
Well, Bristol can be glamorous too, you know. No, you're absolutely right. I was born and raised in Bristol. I did much of my schooling in England, and then in my early 20s, I headed off to the United States. So I certainly do keep in contact with my Bristol roots, but I've been in the States for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. Was there a kind of seminal moment that suddenly turned you on to Los Angeles and all the delights that Hollywood could offer?
Yes, there was. I was actually taken on a trip by my father to Los Angeles when I was about 11 years old, in between, you know, junior and senior school back then. And I remember being absolutely mesmerized by it. You know, I didn't want to leave and I was just obsessed in going back. So it was very much a pivotal moment. I talk about it in my book, The Kim Kardashian Principle. But it was certainly a milestone and a pivotal moment in my life. Gosh, yeah.
So it must have been quite difficult then to go back into your old boys' school and then on to Oxford, knowing that that was really what you were after.
You know, it was difficult in a way, but in the same way, it was also very inspiring because I had now kind of developed a vision for what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be. And I had also found home, so to speak. It was really nice because it also gave me an opportunity to escape from my reality for many years and just, you know, and just think of what I really wanted to do and where I really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your university career, because you were at Oxford and then at Harvard.
That's right. Yes. I graduated from Bristol originally. And then I graduated from Oxford and then I went on to Harvard. So I'm 3 degrees later and having...
like a pop group.
yeah, I guess so. It didn't quite feel like a pop group while being there. I think I was just too focused on getting through exams and stuff. But
What were you reading, though? Did it have anything to do with the celebrity culture that you now work in?
Well, not directly, no. But, you know, I think that was actually the opportunity. You know, I've always been very ambidextrous. I studied pharmacology as an undergraduate. I studied history at Oxford and I went on to the business school at Harvard. So I kind of had many interests from the get-go. I was fortunate to have abilities in many different sort of broad areas too. And I wanted to explore them. And I think that's what education should be about, you know, not boxing yourself in too quickly and doing what you want to do at university and enjoying it. And it was because of, you know, I had the opportunity to develop those sorts of aptitudes. And I was as comfortable with numbers as I was with literature. You know, I was as comfortable with investigating fact as I was with writing fiction. I was able to develop my methodology, JAM. You know, it was the foundations of my work until today.
Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, so JAM, I not so modestly christened Jitendra's Alternate Aptitude Methodology. And it's exactly that. It's fusing together left brain and right brain research techniques and faculties in order to develop sophisticated marketing communications solutions. You know, I'm a big believer that marketers today have to be fluent in both the language of business and creativity. And I think we have a divide in the marketplace where we either have the very creative, fluffy, qualitative marketers who are the advertising or the PR people, or then we have the very quant-based product lifecycle, shelf space management type marketers who are more quantitative focused. And marketing is both a science and an art. So we need to have marketers that are bilingual, fluent in both the language of business and creativity. And that's what, you know, I teach at USC as well.
And of course, you learnt this on the coalface, so to speak, of advertising.
Yes, I did. Yes, I had the privilege of working at some of the largest advertising agencies in the world. I was hired out of business school by Sir Martin Sorrell, who mentored me during my time at Ogilvy and Mather. And I also worked at TBWA Shire Day, which is also another large ad agency. And what I saw there was essentially that people were referring to celebrities as brands, but they really, really weren't treating them as brands. And what I mean by that is, you know, we weren't doing 6-month research studies on Kim Kardashian. We weren't conducting focus groups, one-on-one regression analysis, cluster analysis.
As you would do for soap powder.
As we would do for a soap brand or for a fashion brand or for Amex or for Dove or whatever it may be. So when I moved out to Hollywood, you know, I saw this opportunity and I was like, well, if celebrities are brands, then we should actually treat them like we do any other brand and not just play lip service to that. So I started really investigating the perception of different celebrities and cutting through the smokes and mirrors. So while we were told that, you know, Beyoncé was considered to be the most influential person by Time magazine, what was the reality of that? You know, which celebrities were people mostly influenced by? So I actually went out and asked thousands of people around the world. And it wasn't Beyoncé.
Who was it?
Well, there's no one clear-cut answer to that. But, you know, I think that rankings today are, you know, rankings that are put together based on perceived star power versus actually, you know, how much can somebody move the needle by getting somebody to put their hand in their wallet and purchase something. And that's what brands need to know today. You know, the stakes in the celebrity brand partnership game is getting higher and higher. You know, the deals are bigger. So I think that with the celebrity brand endorsement deals that are getting larger, brands need to know what the power of a celebrity really is amongst the target audience they're going after. And that's where JAM comes in, and that's where the research comes in.
Mm-hmm. Now, JAM is not the only acronym you have. Tell us about SELFIE.
So SELFIE is the acronym that consists of the Kim Kardashian principle. So the Kim Kardashian principle are the six new tenets, the six new paradigm shifts, the six new marketing rules, whatever you want to call them. You know, the shifts that we need to undergo in our minds in order to better connect with today's audiences, better connect with millennials and Generation Z, a new audience, a digital native audience, and to better make sense of what's going on in the world. You know, we have a lot of different images and ideas and brands that are breaking through today. And a lot of those people are blindsiding us. And we're like, whoa, how did that person win? Or how did that person become famous? So SELFIE is an attempt to explain why those people are breaking through and how we can take those learnings and apply them to our own personal brands, to our own ideas, to our own enterprises.
Mm-hmm. So take us through the six principles of SELFIE.
Yes. So S is for surprise. And that very much revolves around the idea of owning your uniqueness and your difference. So if we look at what Kim Kardashian did in Hollywood, she was surrounded by a sea of sameness. In Hollywood, we have very strict stereotypes. You know, if you have a certain hair color and an eye color and a body shape, you can be a leading lady. And if you look slightly different, well, you can only be her best friend. And then if you're a minority actress, such as a Latina, for example, for years they were only cast as prostitutes or toilet cleaners in movies and so forth. So what Kim Kardashian did was that she came along and she owned her uniqueness. She owned her Armenianness. She owned her brunetteness. She owned her unique body shape. And she didn't only just own and rock it, but she amplified those assets that otherwise would have been seen as liabilities. She actually amplified them, busted the mold, and now has redefined what it means to be a leading lady, has redefined what it means to be a sex symbol in Hollywood today. So number one is find what's unique about you or your product and own it. Surprise people in that regard. The second part is around E for expose. And that idea is around today we are told as marketers to be very careful in how we speak to audiences and be careful in our word choices, cultivate what we're saying carefully. But today audiences demand overexposure. They want to see what you're really about. They want to see through to the intention of your idea. And they want to make up their own mind whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's a very empowering message to be able to expose yourself fully and completely to your audience, because we also have to remember that audiences today are very savvy. You know, they have been raised around organizations promising them that their life will be complete, or promising them the perfect product, or people saying all the right things, wearing all the right clothes, having all the right hairstyles, and then behind closed doors being exposed as believing and thinking something very different. So we have a jaded audience now, and we just need to be able to be honest with our audiences and allow them to decide. L is for lead, and the counterintuitive idea around leadership today is that let's not make this audience-centric, let's make leadership you-centric. What do you believe in? What do you stand for? And have the courage of your convictions to stand up for that. And once again, let audiences decide whether they are drawn towards you or not. Don't try to double guess your audience. Don't try to feedback what you think they want you to say or hear.
Gosh, right? That really is counterintuitive, isn't it?
It is counterintuitive, you know. But today, the reality of the situation is that if we see what's happening with those images that are breaking through, Trump is a great example. You know, he imbues his ideas with a personal self-conviction and belief without regard for whether he is going to alienate people or not. And as a result, you create this divisive sort of approach where you get people who completely tune out and you get other people who are willing to overlook your most horrifying statements because they are such diehard core followers. Mm. And you see a lot of successful brands do that too. You know, you're either an Apple or you're a PC, you're either a Coke or a Pepsi. So, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of being polarizing to a degree.
So on to F.
F is for flaws. And today, I'm a strong believer in the fact that perfection is passé. As a matter of fact, millennials are bored with the image of perfection. They don't believe it. It doesn't matter how much organizations are still photoshopping images and so forth. You know, vulnerability is what is attractive to millennials. And then I is for intimacy. Intimacy today is being redefined. When you look at the world and their relationship with products and services, it is no longer a one-on-one affair. You know, a consumer can be intimate with your product, can also be intimate with a competitor's product, and so forth. And last but not least, E is for execute. You know, ideas need to get out there and we need to try different things. We need to see how they work and then we need to amend accordingly.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in what you say about flaws and that we don't need to be photoshopped to be perfect. And that really does represent a great shift in our thinking.
It absolutely does. And, you know, when we look at what audiences are being drawn towards now, vulnerability, humanness, realness are images, ideals, concepts that people are really being drawn towards today. And they're really striking a nerve. And that's really difficult for organizations at the moment because they are still stuck in this mentality that they can't admit to their products being anything but the best thing out there. And what we've got to realize is there's a lot more forgiveness within the marketplace today amongst consumers. You know, we want products to provide practical value. We don't expect them to complete our lives.
Mm-hmm. Does that, I mean, this obsession with being real, that surely then must play into the whole rise of reality television?
Absolutely. I mean, reality television, I think it sort of came together. You know, I think that there was this need to kind of get more out of celebrities, get more out of content. And we wanted to be really let in. If you see what's happening with YouTubers, their appeal is the fact that they are real, that they are candid, that audiences have an equity stake in them. They found them when they were young. They built them up by telling their friends about them. And now they have a much more intimate connection with them, which is why they are more influential than traditional celebrities, which is why they're the new breed of celebrity. But their realness, their candidness, their honesty is their source of power and influence.
Mm-hmm. You also talk in the book about overexposure.
Yes. I mean, for years, we have been told that overexposure is a bad thing. But today, overexposure is a necessary thing. I think that images that are contrived, and I think organizations that are selectively letting audiences in on what is going on, are up against a big challenge, which is essentially the fact that audiences today are a lot wiser and they're a lot savvier and they're making up their minds about what organizations really believe, regardless of whether they come clean or not. So we saw this with Subway and Jared Fogel in the United States. So Subway, the sandwich chain in the United States, had a very famous spokesperson in Jared Fogel, and they had been together for years and the organization had told us how he was a fabric of the brand and how he was part of the family, only to find out that Jared Fogel was actually a pedophile. So when he was exposed as a paedophile, instead of the organization letting us in on what that was like, instead of admitting to the fact that it was a milestone in their organization, instead of becoming a crusader for people who, for causes against paedophilia and educating us on what it was like to work with a paedophile, the warning signs and so forth, they pretend they quickly brushed him under the carpet, quickly distanced themselves from him and pretended he didn't exist. And that's a dangerous strategy. That's an old school strategy, because even though you do that, audiences are still thinking, wait a minute, what went on? You know, and they become even more suspicious. They're like, why did you immediately distance yourself from somebody who you were only championing 24 hours ago? There's something going on here. And then they'll start asking questions like, how long did you actually know about his truth before you came clean with us? And so forth. So this level of distrust is incredibly high, and you need to overexpose.
You mentioned Donald Trump earlier, and you write that pop culture and politics are linked. Politicians are bona fide superstars.
Absolutely. Politicians today are superstars. The game of politics is now forever changed with Trump having come into power. And it was interesting. I was asked the other day on television, you know, has the world gone mad with electing Donald Trump? And I said that I don't think the world has gone mad. I think the world wants authenticity, and they want to decide who they want to lead them, whether that be a politician, whether that be a business person, whether that be an entertainer. Today, the power is in the hands of the audience.
They now realize that the images that surround them aren't real. They want to see true flaws and imperfections. But what else does an audience really want? From your research, what do you think it is?
I think an audience wants to hate. I think an audience wants to hate on brand. You know, hate today is a status symbol. If your idea is not getting hated, you don't have a strong enough opinion. So that's another counterintuitive idea that the Kim Kardashian principle teaches us. You know, don't shy away from hate. You know, wherever there, people have built empires on hate.
A whole country, indeed, seems to be coming out of that. In your last chapter, Execute, you give us a concrete guide on how to market ourselves, the steps and the rules. Before we go into that, I suppose my question is, why? Why would you want to market yourself?
It's a really good question. And I think that this is an absolute paradigm shift that we need in order to connect with younger generations today. Being on social media, being popular, having fame today is the holy grail amongst younger audiences, more so than wanting to become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it may be. Now, there are a multitude of reasons as to why that may be the case, but ultimately today, everybody wants to be famous. And social media has enabled people to create their own fan followings and to achieve that. So I think part of the reason is to recognize that new reality in which we live. The second reason is not only to recognize it, but to empathize with that. Because unless we don't empathize with the need to be seen, the need to be recognized, and all the different reasons why that might be the case, it's going to be really hard for us as marketers and as individuals to create ideas, images, products, services that are going to resonate emotionally with this new audience.
So it's about selling.
It's about selling, but it's also about empathizing, striking an emotional nerve with audiences and really getting your fans.
So how do you do it, presuming one wants to?
Well, you have to apply the selfie principle and you have to read the book.
But the rules: be a deviant, diverse and innovative, be bad and don't apologize for it. Don't cover up, testify. Fear is your friend.
Fear is your friend today. You know, I think that in the book we talk about Elon Musk versus the Dalai Lama and what sorts of leaders are really breaking through, what sorts of leaders are we voting for today, and which sorts of leaders are really having an impact. And, you know, when I spoke to people at SpaceX, it was fascinating because they said that one of the first questions that people ask when they come to the organization is that, have you met Elon? And Elon terrifies the same people he motivates and they love him so much. And he's an enormously effective leader. So that, I'm not saying, is the only way to lead, but it's worth taking a look at because it's an alternative type of leadership.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to the Dalai Lama.
As opposed to the Dalai Lama, who is also a social media savvy leader. But many people question the impact that he's having. And many people are questioning the motives, you know. So, yes, he does also like to hang out with celebrities, with Richard Gere, Sharon Stone. He turns up at Glastonbury, celebrates with Lionel Richie. He lets us in on post-party action on his Instagram account and so forth. But, you know, what is exactly his role and how effective is he being? A lot of people are measuring performance now on very bottom line basis. Mm. And we see a lot of problems, you know, with in Tibet and amongst the religious sects there. So,
do you think that fame ultimately will eat itself, that we will be destroyed by this hunger for public recognition?
It's really interesting. It's an incredibly interesting question. I don't claim to know what the future holds. What I will say is that it's very dangerous putting different ideas, concepts, people in the good or bad bucket. Today, I think we're seeing a redefinition. You know, so the people who we might well have felt free to demonize, degrade, vilify because they might not have had any talent, so to speak, or they might not deserve to be where they are, is a dangerous strategy because what is good and what is bad and what is desirable and not desirable is now being fundamentally redefined. You know, what I do find is that when I speak to millennials and especially college students and high school students, you see how they are inspired by Kim Kardashian. They actually want to be like Kim Kardashian. And I see a lot of generations who are still completely perplexed and are like, well, we don't even know why she's so successful and so famous. And that, I think, is an issue because I think talent is now being redefined. Whether or not this is heading in the right way or the wrong way is all very much depending on personal perspective.
Mm-hmm. Now, you actually teach this. You're at the University of Southern California. Just tell me about translating the principles that you have in this book to a lesson plan. And what is it that you're sending your students out there to do?
Well, firstly, the translation of this into a lesson plan equals fun and insight. And I hope it proves to be very thought-provoking for students. What I'm hoping to do with the methodology is to develop a new breed of marketers, you know, those who are fluent in both the language of business and creativity and are able to speak to what is happening in the world and develop ideas that are relevant and current and empathize with audiences. You know, empathy is necessary. Brands that empathize are brands that are going to win.
You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of Claire Urban and Maria Grinina. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.